Welcome, everybody, and Merry Christmas. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, and today I'm joined by Seth Holehouse, maninamerica.com, and perhaps another surprise guest may be joining us soon. But Seth, it's great to have you on. Merry Christmas to you, Seth. I love your hat. Welcome.
Merry Christmas to you, Mike. Yeah, I was so happy you said, hey, bring your Santa hat. I think I've got one sitting in my studio from last year. So yeah, it's a beautiful time of year, isn't it?
Very good. Yeah. And you've got the whole beard going too. So it kind of, it works on you a lot better than it does on me. You can pull it off.
I guess maybe, well, you would pull off an elf better than I would, right? Because all the elves are clean shaven. It's just, you know, Santa's
is that
guy
right? Did you just call me a Christmas elf? Is that right? Okay. No, you're right. I've got other hats here though that I'm gonna introduce throughout the program here. By the way, for those of you joining, this isn't just joking around about Santa hats and so on. We're gonna talk about crypto and finances and the failing fiat currencies and so much more in FTX. But I have Santa humping a reindeer as a hat. Like you can wear this hat. I'm not gonna do it, but you can wear this thing as a hat and it's the deer legs go over your head like that. And then it's, well, I guess he's riding, but he looks a little aggressive there from my point of view. I thought the reindeer was supposed to pull the sleigh, but I didn't know Santa was like just riding this thing like a donkey. Anyway. So let's get started here. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's begin with the collapse of FTX and the whole crypto space. And give us your overview, if you would, Seth. And, oh, I should give out your website, maninamerica.com. Really appreciate you, Seth. We've had a great time doing a couple of interviews. I love your perspective. So give us your view of what's happening with the crypto space right now.
Yeah, well, it's a lot to unpack. And I try to approach it almost in a speculative way because there's so many strings that extend out from this, and they lead us back to say Brock Pierce or Epstein or Maxwell or I think actually the breaking news pieces that I think came out today was that SBF or perhaps or FTX, they just hired the attorney that Ghislaine Maxwell used. Did you see that before the show?
Yeah,
it's just like there's just this giant incestuous pool that they're all swimming in, and. When I'm looking at, okay, what's happening with FTX, there's a few different angles I look at it. Your audience really understands. I guess there's no reason to kind of give a basic kind of description of what happened. I think your audience is, especially watching your show and my show, numerous times. They've been following it. And so I think that it's fundamentally what we're seeing is I think they're setting things up for a central bank digital currency. Now, whether it was on the timeline that the powers that be wanted, I feel like that there are some things that didn't happen in their timeline, which we can get into that. Actually, I just finished an interview with Todd Callender, and we dug really heavily into all the indicators that the plans of the elites are actually failing, and that they're missing their marks or missing their timing. But I think that to kind of boil down the essence of it, I think that crypto, especially Bitcoin, was a tool that they had their hand in inventing, right? The cabal, whatever you want to call them. And it became this magical money machine, right? We look at what they've done with fiat currencies, this Babylonian money magic with derivatives and just everything where they're kind of just multiplying money out of nothing. It's almost like the same thing was happening in crypto, but it was like to like the nth degree where there's no stopping it. And so people are putting the money in these exchanges like FTX. They're taking that money out. They're borrowing against it. They're betting against it. Hundreds, thousands of times, and then they're moving it around as a giant criminal slush fund, right? And I think that's like very fundamentally. I think if you take a step back and look at what are these tools, right? And even the monetary system. It's easy to think that, oh, okay, our monetary system. We have our dollars, and say you find out that the Federal Reserve isn't really a federal company, right? It's basically a private bank. It's enslaved America, by being in debt to it, by lending money with interest that can never be repaid back. But it's actually kind of digging deeper into it. The entire financial system is not just that, oh, this is our money we use. It is an intentional tool that was designed for a purpose to enslave us. right? And I think it was Kissinger who said that, you control food, you control a country, you control energy, you control a continent, I think it was, and then you control money and you control the world. And so they've used that money system to pull all of our blood, sweat, and tears into their coffers, getting us to put our money into things like stocks or whatever it is they have full control over. And then whenever they're done with, kind of squeezing every last drop out of it, they'll collapse the system and they'll bring in something new. Well, I think that in a lot of ways, crypto was the kind of 2.0 version of that, which was setting things up for their central bank digital currency. But I also think that what it was doing is, I actually think that, and hopefully our magical guest can appear on this, because I think this is something he really kind of focuses in on. But I think that in a lot of ways that crypto became this great tool to get a lot of these, especially younger investors, that I think would have naturally probably gone towards putting money into silver and gold, that all these people instead put their money into crypto, this hot new thing. And so it's almost like it's fiat currency 2.0, where they can get everybody to throw their money into it. They're going to take it and do really nefarious things with it. And then when they're done with that, like when they're kind of at the end, when they've really milked all the last drops out of it, they'll collapse it and they'll say, hey, Hegelian dialectic, right? Well, hey, here's our excuse, right? So we told you that unregulated cryptocurrency was a bad thing. As you can see, here's what's happening. And so now we need to bring out our centralized digital currency.
Yeah, what's extraordinary about this, if you ask me, is that through crypto, they've taught an entire generation all of the lingo of digital money, and they've created familiarity with digital money. So people are used to using their apps and their mobile phones and so on. Hey, our mystery guest has joined us. It's John Perez, everybody, from Silver is Money. Hello, John.
Is my sound coming through?
Yeah, it is. You're on.
Chrome was not having any part of me today for a while there.
No, that's all right. You made it. We're just getting going. But where's your Christmas hat, John?
I forgot my hat. It left it in my truck, set it up here. So I do have a little bit of background here to make up for my loss of hat here. So
okay, well, then hold on.
With the show we go.
I'm going to have to upgrade my hat to make up for your loss of a hat.
No.
So now we have super sparkly Christmas hat. Yeah, how about that? All right.
Now that is cool.
Magical stardust.
I need one of those.
But earlier, Seth called me a Christmas elf, so I'm really way behind on the score here. But welcome, John. It's great to have you on.
So good to be on. So good. Hey, Merry Christmas. We still say Merry Christmas around here.
We do say Merry Christmas. Yes, indeed. Okay. So maybe we can do some post effects and put a hat on you, but it's all okay. So the question on the table, John, is, as Seth actually put this out there, that the crypto space has been used to provide kind of a stepping stone into a government-run digital currency system, so that Bitcoin and the crypto space accomplished the familiarity of an entire generation of people or multiple generations with this process. And then, crypto is being imploded from the inside, it seems, while maybe fiat currencies are being collapsed at some point here to force people into a digital currency system. Do you think that's a viable theory there, John?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, about a couple of weeks ago, Seth and I had an interview. We talked about this, and Seth is on board and 100%. In fact, I said during the show that this was going to open the door. FTX was, I think I remember I said, Janet Yellen and Powell are going to love this situation because they can now throw FTX under the bus and clear the way for their new CBDC, which I have a feeling they're going to surprise everyone with possibly throwing XRP into the mix. In fact, I think Michael Saylor was just tweeting out a little while ago that Michael Saylor is panicking and telling the SEC to shut down XRP because it's a security. Literally just in the last hour,
really?
The last 2 hours on Twitter has been a flurry of activity here. So Seth was right on the money here. I think, we're dealing with the Hegelian dialect problem, Bitcoin reaction, overregulate, FTX, overregulate, open up the door and clear the deck and let's put in our avenue of what we want to do here, which is what has been the expectation for a long time.
All right. So let me ask both of you. Okay. To Seth first, Timing. I know we always have to be cautious, and I'm not going to try to nail you down on a specific date, but are we thinking before 2024? Or what? Give us your rough ideas of when this is going to happen, or are there goalposts that we're looking for that are indicators?
Well, I mean, we know that there's, I think, is what, 12 major banks are now working with the Fed and testing, you know, their central bank digital currencies. The one thing is that I think that there's been, it's interesting, you know, when you look at timing, because I think it was the Economist magazine, right? And this actually, I just finished a conversation with Todd Callender about this exact same thing. And he brought this point, which I'll reiterate here, is that the Economist magazine, which is owned by the Rothschilds, right? So, you know, it's, they, I think it was in the late 90s or around 2000, they published a cover, and the article, I think it was the eagle, kind of standing on a pile of burning cash, holding a digital coin, like a Bitcoin, basically. And it was really this prediction. Yeah. And they were saying with this that by 2018, they will have fully rolled out their digital currency, and that basically we wouldn't be using any paper money anymore. And so, you know, again, you know, we know how they work. You know, when they say that, you know, we're going to be doing this in 20 years, it's not just like they're throwing darts at a board and picking a time. That's a reflection of a really intricate plan to get us to that place. And if you look at where we're at now, like, I would say we're nowhere close to having our paper money replaced by digital currency from the perspective of,
so they're
like,
behind schedule.
Well, yeah, they're still, you know, I think it was less than a year ago, Biden saying, hey, can we do a white paper on this? With the Canadian bank still testing on it. They're still, so I think that they are really behind schedule. Now, I think that 2023, the year ahead of us, is going to be the year where all of what, you know, all of us have collectively talked about, it's all going to happen at once, right? You know, we're talking, I think the food shortages, all the energy, like, you know, crisis coming out of the winter for Europe. Even, you know, looking at people like Martin Armstrong or Jim Rickards, they're, you know, saying, look, they see, you know, 2023 is a time when the market really starts to have its bottom pulled out from under it. So I think that, you know, in terms of their timing for the CBDC, that, you know, again, it's like what John said, you know, Hegelian dialectic, they're trying to, here's the problem, here's the reaction, here's the solution. And so I think that they're going to try to accelerate that. And I would expect that in, probably my guess is maybe the second half of 2023 is when they really start pushing this, but it's not because they're pushing it from this place of that they're very planned and everything's going according to how it should be. It's that they're scrambling and the old system is collapsing faster than they want it to, and their new system isn't really built completely yet. So they're going to be caught with their pants down, I think.
Hmm. John, your thoughts?
I'm in agreement with Seth about the timing of this, because if you look at it, you stop and think for a second. First of all, Trump was not supposed to win in 2016.
Yeah,
we're supposed to have Hillary here for 8 years. So if that CBDC and that plan that the Economist magazine Phoenix Bird cover on there. Back, by the way, if you look at the logo on that coin on the Phoenix Bird, that's actually the XLM logo, XRP logo. So if you stop and think for a moment, along the lines of what Seth just said, because I agree with it 100% here. If you look at the 16-year plan, Trump was not supposed to be here. Now, if Hillary's here, we'd all probably be in FEMA camps right now, you know?
Yeah, especially the three of us.
We wouldn't have much say about it. We wouldn't have much say about shoving this coin down our throats here. So I think what Seth's point is that they're scrambling. I don't think that the current regime, a financial regime, really expected to have loss of control. They really have loss of control right here, because Trump has literally thrown a wrench in everything, you know, and they just didn't have the control they could have had, would have had, you know. COVID, we would be in a different, but imagine COVID with Hillary. I mean, all, this entire scene would just completely change had she had been around. I think the wrench that Trump threw, such a big wrench in the wheel here, that the whole system is wobbling. And like Seth said, you know, the system now is going to have to collapse, and they really can't stop what they're attempting to do. They can't just say, we give up, you know, let's go the gold standard. They can't do that. So generally when markets crash starting in the spring, the fall, they go all the way in bottom in March, April, overshoot a little bit. But I think with the winter we have coming in, deindustrialization of Europe here, no doubt, though, the move for the CBDC, it's already ongoing. I think, in fact, last year we had our interview, Mike, I talked about December 21st being a big day. And I said, big things are going to happen. And December 21st came and nothing happened. I know, because a few people said, well, nothing happened, Perez. I'm like, well, something did happen. December 21st was the expiration date of Executive Order 13818. But on December 16th, Joe Biden came in and extended it another year. Now we fast forward to another year. What I thought was going to happen last year at this time didn't happen. It has to happen between now and the 20th, the 21st, the 22nd, because that executive order, which is specifically crypto-related as far as seizing assets of people that are involved with human trafficking, that expires in just about a week and a half. Wow. So I'm expecting some fireworks here. This is a major deal because executive order is specifically designed to stop any type of crypto that was involved with human trafficking and the whole pedophile coin here. And we're talking now, the story is out, FTX in the last 2 hours hired Ghislaine Maxwell's attorney with Epstein. We're always going to go back. And this end of the day, we are always going to go back down the Epstein road here. And lo and behold, I mean, this is why I was late on here. I thought, wait a second, this story's breaking here. I got to get on this interview. This is right down my alley here. So I think to what Seth's point was about things coming unglued in the summertime, I'm watching between now and the 21st and the 22nd of this, because if this executive order expires and nothing happens, I mean, then it's free reign for the other side. But if it doesn't expire and there's actions taken before the 21st, I think this entire narrative and story can change between now and then. So between now and December 21st, lots of action into the summer. It makes sense logistically, but you've got 90 million, 100 million Trumpers that are not going to be happy about a CBDC. And they've got, now they're back on Twitter. You know, Elon's brought the Patriots back on Twitter. They're speaking out. They're not going to say yes to CBDC. So the people that trying to put together the surveillance state and tracking coin system here, they're going to have challenges for sure.
All right. So then, folks, be on the lookout for the great pedo takedown to happen before Christmas. That would be the best Christmas present for humanity. Okay. Next question for both of you gentlemen. I'd like to ask you to prove that you put your money where your mouth is, so to speak. So aside from what you say publicly, things that you espouse other people might do to protect their assets, what kinds of things are you personally doing to preserve your assets in anticipation of, you know, bank freezes, currency collapses, revaluation of the dollar, whatever happens? What are you doing yourself? Seth, we'll start with you.
Sure. So to me, looking at preserving, you know, assets, it ties into so many more things than say, okay, I'm diversifying and I'm in stocks and I'm in bonds and I'm this. You know, to me, that is just one tool of prepping. And when I say prepping, it's really becoming more resilient, more off-grid, you know, even, you know, like little chunk of silver like this, right? A little 10-ounce bar. This to me is getting off-grid, right? It's like I'm getting out of their system. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, to money, you know, even if I have a little extra money, I might, you know, buy, you know, a couple ounces of silver or an ounce of gold, or recently I bought, you know, a few little bags of junk silver. There's a friend of mine, I used to be in the gold and silver kind of like, I was a scrap buyer basically at one point. And I had a contact of mine. He called me and said, hey, Seth, I just got this bag of junk silver coins in. Is that something for you? And I said, yeah, you know,
definitely,
so, so it was a cool package to unwrap. So for, you know, folks that are watching, you know, junk silver, you know, this is is it 1967? I think it was, or
no, I think it's 63, but it depends on the exact coin. But I say 63 generally.
Yeah, okay. You know, where your coins, they still had, a silver coin, you know, roughly 90, I think 90%,
about 90-91%, something.
40s.
Yeah, right.
There's 90% and 40% copper. The 40% clad, and then they got the 90%. I think it's pre 65.
Yeah. Okay.
You would know better, John. So yeah, thanks for clarifying.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why I had to say, okay, yeah, put it in a bag and I'll buy it. You know. So basically,
yeah. John's probably got like a whole cabinet full of these right behind him there.
Yeah.
So like if he opens that up, silver will spill out all over the studio.
Yeah, so, so that's, I mean, part
Seth.
Of it is
I was Seth.
Yeah, is just you know putting some things into precious metals, and really trying to just avoid my exposure. You know, I'm not someone, I don't have anything in stocks, I don't have anything in bonds. You know, I moved my accounts. I used to be with, say, JP Morgan, for instance, and I went and found a couple of different small local banks, and now I bank with these banks. And one of my banks has only 7 branches just in the area where I live. And I talk to them, I say, hey, you know, if I, you know, I have these conversations with them about what's happening with the financial system, and they're, you know, much more resilient. So I'm just trying to move and kind of decentralize and kind of pull myself away from that bigger system as much as I can. And I'm really trying to, you know, approach it from the perspective of I'm trying to preserve my wealth and protect my wealth. I'm not someone that's saying, look, you know, if you buy $5,000 in silver right now, it's going to go to the moon. It'll be worth $200,000. You know, I think there's a great potential, but that's not what's driving me.
Right. It's not about speculation. It's about hitting the pause button on assets. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So great answer. Thank you, Seth. John, we know you're all about silver because that's your name there. Silver is money. But in addition to metals, what else are you doing?
Well, I think people should have across the bullion coins and across the, I call it the seven, it's a 7-layer backup. Everything from bars, bullion coins, to pre-65 coins, 90%, 40% coins, clad coins, and even down to, I've even advised people to even consider getting grams of silver. I mean, if silver hits $1,200 an ounce, then a gram of silver is going to be very useful to have. So that sets aside the silver side. Now, I cover, I work in the stock side of things too, because in the past, the stock market has always returned 7, 8, 10 times more leverage than the spot silver price. So let's say silver goes to $225 an ounce, you know, so it's up, you know, 5 times here. That leverage crosses over into the silver stock space. And in past bull markets, going back all the way down to the World War II, when homestake mining took off like a rocket, while everyone talks about the Depression, you know, gold getting confiscated, if you look back at the confiscation and you look back at the stocks, yes, it was a crash. There was a depression. But if you owned homestake mining stock, you were making 35 to 45% a year sitting on a mining stock while everything went, you know, into the toilet. So now we're prepared. In my case here, I have everyone I work with, it's required. You have to have your physical at home first. Physical first. Physical first, always your basis. Got to have your physical. From there, you're ready to speculate. We're going to have positions here in the stock market everywhere from exploration stocks, royalty stocks, you know, intermediate mining stocks. And that's been my focus since 2007. I've been specifically after leaving Monex, working in the silver area, the physical silver, going into the stock sector. And that is where we just have always done really well. And that sector is on fire right now. You can't, from the public side, they see the retail side. People say, well, there's really nothing moving. But I'm on the deal side watching. I said, there's tens of millions of dollars coming into that sector right now. Everyone's drilling. They're finding gold. They're drilling. And they're reporting news. Says, John, the news is coming out, but the stock's not moving anymore. I said, don't worry. That's why I said, because there's only less than 1% of the investment market in the stocks market. It's only going to take a move of 1%, which is going to be pretty soon when these markets tank, as Seth was saying. The stocks are like, it's time to buy stocks? Nope. Housing market? Nope. That's done. Crypto? Nope. Okay, we're getting down to the life jackets now. Which life jacket do you want? Silver physical or silver stocks or gold physical? We're down to the wire. There's really not much left.
Okay, all right.
Banks, so, you know, so there's a lot to go there.
All right, great. Good. I'm glad you brought that up because I have a question for you about that. But just to summarize your last answer, what John Perez is doing other than metals is different kinds of metals. So thank you for that. All kinds of different metals.
As well, Mike, is to me actually the number one thing in terms of where any extra money goes. It's really food and you know, just like the core prepping items. You know, because it's like we're talking right now. Yeah, okay. Say right now, an ounce of silver is $20, and maybe it could be $200. Well, if right now you can get a 50-pound bag of hard red wheat that has a, you know, 20-year shelf life if stored properly. You know, what's a pound of wheat worth if in a year from now you can't get wheat? So that's one thing. It's, again, it's not speculation, just looking at the fact that, you know, I'd rather if I can make sure I've got the next couple of years worth of food for my family laid out just in case.
Yeah. You know, there was, I used to live in Taiwan and I heard all these stories from the old timers there who lived under Japanese occupation. And there was massive famine during those early years, you know, after Chiang Kai-shek and the Taiwanese people left mainland China. And they were telling me a true story. They said at one point, a family traded a duck for an entire building. So just having the duck, because starvation was so bad, having the duck got you basically a multi-story, you know, concrete building that you could live in, because the buildings became worthless if you don't have anything to eat. So I'm glad you brought that up, Seth. But doesn't this, John, doesn't this get us to a key advantage of metals? Because you can always trade metals for food, I would think. Yes. I mean, throughout history, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've told a lot of people, I mean, not only do I cover metals, but I cover, look, you know, I tell people food is money. You know, seeds are, I believe seeds. Like I have a belief that, you know, people said, I've said on my show, I'm going to invest in seeds. What do you mean? I said, I'm going to buy enough seeds for myself, but I'm going to go ahead and buy a lot of seeds in case I have neighbors who did not completely prepare, but I don't want them knocking on my door. I want to, you know, teach a man to you know, feed a man a fish. Let's teach them how to garden here. So to me, seeds are going to be money. I think food is going to be money. But yes, having silver and gold in trade, fractionals, I think that the 90% coins that Seth talked about, the pre-65 90% coins, the 40% clad coins, those are going to be useful in barter situations. A loaf of bread, I've told a lot of people, look, if we're in a bad situation and you lost your job because you didn't want to take the jab, and you're wondering, we may be in a situation where you may want to own 300 pounds of flour and two little bread machines, and you may be selling loaves of bread for a couple pre-1965 silver dimes, which is a very realistic possibility. So, you know, I think that people, you know, seeds are money, so you can grow food, you know, having bread, you know, having flour. I mean, I know a couple of people call me. I bought 300 pounds, 200 pounds, 250 pounds, and I bought two bread machines. I said, you must be listening to my show here, you know, because I mean, from a biblical perspective, there's talks about a loaf of bread is going to cost a wheelbarrow full of cash, you know, what's that mean here? So I think that, you know, silver is money, food is money, health is money. You know, and then also I encourage people to start getting your body used to fasting. I believe in people should do fasting to prepare for their bodies in case they have to do that. I mean, God forbid it happens, but if it does, and you've gone through a fasting exercise and a regimen, then it's not going to hit you as hard physically and emotionally here. So
yeah, we're going to call this foods are money. Joe Biden's forced weight loss plan for America. There's going to be a lot of calorie restriction happening. Seth, I know that you grow food. Tell us about what you do, you know, and you have a tractor and everything. We talked about that previously. What are you doing at your homestead to actually prepare for food production?
Oh, there's a handful of things. I mean, obviously there's the growing process, which, and I couldn't agree more with seeds. And that's something that, you know, Scott Kesterson over at Bards FM talks about. He says, look, you know, if in the future, put together little seed packets, make some instructions on how to grow. So if families come to you when there's some food shortages, you know, again, teach them how to grow, give them a little packet of seeds. And seeds, yeah, look, you could spend $100 on seeds right now. Those seeds would feed a village. You know what I mean? Because the amount you can grow off of a tiny little seed is incredible. And so, you know, for us, you know, this past year, we just moved into our new home about a little over a year ago. So we've really set up our property for growing. We planted, you know, probably 15 or so different fruit trees of various, you know, varieties, and built out, you know, gardens and raised beds, and, you know, dug trenches and did, you know, kind of, you know, soil management. I got, you know, probably two different dump truck loads of really good composted soil blend, you know, to use across the property. You know, then right now, so one of the next things I do is figure out a root storage, you know, root cellar, because we had a huge potato crop. Right now they're sitting, you know, covered up in the garage, because the garage has been like a nice root cellar temperature as we're heading into the winter. It's still warm enough, but we probably got 400 pounds of potatoes that came out of the ground. And so it was our first time planting potatoes, and it was like amazing digging these things up. It's like you're like finding buried treasure. So that's a big thing. You know, we've got a little freeze dryer. So I know a lot of people, they're getting the food buckets. I know, Mike, you do the food buckets, which is fantastic. But we've been kind of making our own food buckets, you know, freeze drying, you know, frozen vegetables or leftover food.
And isn't it a ton of work? Isn't that amazing how much work it takes?
Yeah, it is. Yes.
See, that's the other thing, and I'm going to direct it to you, John, but right now we have the advantage of fossil fuels being used to drive tractors and agricultural equipment and trucking and everything, and the leverage that that provides is incredible. When you have to start doing these things yourself, you realize, oh my gosh, this is crazy work here to grow food and save it and dehydrate it and freeze dry it and peel the potatoes and all this stuff. And, you know, you've done all that work and you end up with like, oh my gosh, it's... I'm still lacking something here. Like, where's the bacon, you know, or whatever. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I have, well, you know, I've do all my physical labor. I built all these different garden boxes. You know, since I'm in Southern California, the citrus is growing a lot of, you know, tangelos, lemons, limes, and more citrus based than the, you know, getting ready for the winter crop, you know, with winter lettuce that's coming in right now. But it's a lot of work. And I think that I've always told people, if you're going to build garden boxes, whatever you think you're going to need, double that. Just double it. Because you'll find out as you produce, you know, you're going to have to deal with critters. You know, critters will come in and they want their cut. You know, the squirrels want to know, what are you growing this month? What are you growing? You know, last year was a good crop. You know, what do we get this year? And I have a lot of squirrels, you know, and, this year, I thought, okay, more security this time. But there's also some other challenges that could be a factor. And I think food security is going to be maybe a security where if we've got people in a famine type situation, which that scenario easily plays out, we could have, you could be having to deal with people coming into your yard looking to raid your garden, you know, and that becomes a factor. So I think, you know, not only, you know, getting your garden's ready, I double your garden. Whatever you think garden boxes are, double it. You're going to need to do that.
Yeah, you got
to
go South Clint Eastwood on the Raiders too. Like, hey, punk, how much do you really want those green beans, you know?
Yes, yes. And, you know, if south-facing windows, for the prepping for dummies last-minute guy, you know, it's like, you know, you're 20 years old, you don't know what you're doing. It's like, I got a house. South-facing windows, that's where you're going to grow your alfalfa sprouts. Learn to grow. If you only had a couple chickens and you had some bread and you have alfalfa sprouts, you've got an egg sandwich with alfalfa sprouts. That's a bread.
Good point.
That's my favorite. I tell people, hey, worst case scenario, homemade bread, a couple hens, and alfalfa sprouts, you're good to go here. I know it sounds simple, but because there are a lot of people who are just literally – I've had people contact, I'm just waking up right now. What do I do? Wait a second. So what have you done? I've done nothing. I've got five ounces of silver. I'm just getting started.
Oh, well, okay.
We're going to have to step on the gas here, my man.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you know, you mentioned people maybe raiding gardens. So there was a story that broke earlier today of a gas station in Philadelphia, I believe, that hired a guy to be an armed guard with an AR-15 style pistol. It looked like a 9mm to me because of the magazine. It wasn't really a full AR. But anyway, you know, kind of intimidating looking guy walking around the gas station to try to stop people from robbing the place. Now, Seth, how crazy do you think it's going to get when whatever these things happen are, you know, currency collapse or so on, is private security going to be the answer for everybody? Is everybody going to have to, or neighborhoods are going to have to hire guards for their gardens? Or where do you think this is going?
I think that a lot of it depends on where you live. You know, like if you live in a little, you know, condo in the middle of San Francisco, you know, that could get a little bit hairy.
Zombie land.
Right? you know, I think that, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, we do know, what's the saying? I think that, you know, at any given point, we're about what 9 meals away from anarchy. And
yeah,
so
right.
If we get to place where, you know, a father can no longer feed, you know, his child, things could get, they could get pretty hairy, you know? I have gone down the potential of what could happen with you know, prepping scenarios, EMP, et cetera. And you get to a place where it's like, if things get bad enough, only people that are on like a 100-acre, preserve with a private driveway and like a bunker are the ones that make it. You know, so I was like, okay, I don't think things are gonna get to that point, right? Because that's true Mad Max level collapse. And I think that while we have some difficult times ahead, I just have this belief that there's enough good people that are on Earth and enough people that are actually becoming good in this process of seeing all this evil that I think will help kind of humanity avoid that level of a difficult situation. But, you know, I'm still in the ways I can preparing for, preparing for whatever I need to do. So, perimeter security is a big thing. Like right now, my kind of project, which I've just started working on, is I got these big metal LED solar powered street lights, right? So these street lights that normally you put on a pole up 50 feet, above. And my goal is to actually cover the property in these motion censored solar power street lights. I've got a dog, right? So there's like my basic perimeter security. It's like
that's the perfect low tech system.
Billy comes over to steal a hen. The light's turning on bright as anything and my dog's barking. And then it's like, okay. Yep. So that's the first stage. But yeah, I mean, I think that just look to history, like that. If we want to see like what we could be facing, look to history, look at, areas where they've experienced currency collapse or where they've had true famine. And it get dicey.
All right. So one quick redirect to you, Seth, on that. So even if people themselves are good, a lot of the governments are not, and they're at war with people. So I was talking earlier today, in fact, about the Holodomor in Ukraine, the 1930s. The Soviets starved out and killed millions of people. Those were good people. Yeah. Those weren't evil people, but they were starving and they were desperate because of what the Soviet Empire did to them at that time. If something were to happen today, good people can still do crazy things, and they will if they're hungry enough. What do you say to that, Seth?
Oh, I agree. And that's the thing is even your neighbor who is a priest, hypothetically, if that person, if he has a daughter that he's watching that he can't feed, people will resort to their most kind of base survival instincts, which I really hope we don't get to that. But yeah, I mean, I really believe that the real threat is the government. And that's the thing is that, the Second Amendment, there's such a confusion, I think it's intentional for a lot of folks around the Second Amendment. They say, why do you need a 30-round AR-15 to shoot a deer? It's like, well, I don't. It's like, actually, I need that to defend my home from the government. You know what I mean? It's like, you look into history, whether it was Cambodia or Germany or Russia or China, it always started with the confiscation of the guns. And so I think that the greatest threat, really isn't our neighbor. It's the FEMA camps. It's the government.
But they don't even, and I'll direct to you now, John, but the government doesn't even need to use coercion or kinetic weapons to do that. All they have to do is shut down the infrastructure of the food system, diesel fuel, trains, barges, things, right? The logistics of the infrastructure. And then people will voluntarily go to the FEMA camps and beg. They're like, please save us, FEMA, Mr. FEMA camp. Is Hillary in here? We want to meet with Hillary, get more food. What do you think, John? I mean, isn't it easy for them to corral so many people?
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's look what's on the table right now. We have the Russian oil cap was established in the last 48 hours. We got big problems coming there. Then we've got, I just saw a couple hours ago, the nationwide strike in rails, 14 unions are striking on Christmas Eve for 3 days. So now I got the Russian oil cap. It's illegal to transport LNG on rail, so there'll be no energy. We are exporting everything out to Europe and getting 200-300%, but that's taking away our energy levels here. So I think we're already going down that path. And then we've got diesel Armageddon. And I mean, I've told people, if you live in an area where you need to drive in the snow, you had better get snow chains, because we're going to see cities say, we are not plowing the roads. We did not budget for fuel to pay for $10, $12, $15 fuel. And I got snow tires. I'm like, snow tires here. You're going to need snow chains. You get stuck out. And we're in Grand Solar Minimum. We're in the mini ice age right now. We got Mauna Loa ready to blow up. We've got two volcanoes in Russia ready to blow up. A volcano blew up in Italy yesterday. Now an Indonesian volcano blew up yesterday. And we got Grand Solar Minimum. If these ashes go up in the sky, there's not going to be a spring. then we're going to have a little spring in the summer and there'll be no food. So we have really big problems. And I think to your point here, Mike, I think whether we believe that is going to happen or not going to happen, I think we should, I always tell people, look, prepare for the worst and pray for the best. That is the best advice I can give you. Prepare. God forbid it does happen. But if it does happen here, you know, I posed the question today, what are you going to do when your neighbor pounds on your door and says, I need firewood, I am freezing? Okay. Then the next day, what happens? Okay. Winter, summer, you know, spring comes on. I have no food. Can you give me some food? That doesn't end from there here. So people are going to have to make some serious decisions here as what the line in the sand is going to be for them. And because as Seth said, people will resort to their basic instincts. And what you said about the FEMA, people are going to run to the government and say, help us. You know, they're going to say, sure, come on over here. We've got just the place for you here. Mm-hmm. You know, get your vaccine updated. We got a new one for you to get in. You know, you're at the gate. I'm ready to go in. I want my free cheese, you know.
Right.
Well, great. Right. It's right over there. But you're going to need a updated vax here. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios that I can come up with. But I think everyone should prepare for the worst and pray for the best. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I say it all the time. But prepare for the worst, because as we all know from the examples in the past here, when people get hungry, they're going to go to their basic instincts. They're going to steal, cheat, lie, and do what they have to. And as you said, the government, you look at what a coincidence, Russian oil cap. Well, you know, we've got a Yellen coming for another round of Russian oil cap stuff in February. But Russia said yesterday, they said, we will not sell oil to anyone who agrees with the oil cap. So now you got countries like people are going to freeze. You know,
yeah,
now
a lot of Americans don't know that much of the diesel that has been available in the United States came from Russian oil, and it was refined in the Gulf Coast refineries. So without Russian oil, you know, they don't have access to cheap, abundant oil to make the diesel, and they have to tap into other supplies. So there's scarcity. But Seth, you heard all that. I know you've got some comments about it. Go ahead, sir. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, I think just fundamentally, this is such an important discussion. And I just want to say, I appreciate, you know, Mike helping pull this together. I think it was John here idea initially, because these are the discussions that we have to be having. And it doesn't have to be this really scary thing, right? As I find that once you wrap your head around it, you start taking some basic, you know, steps. You know, I think it's less than 2% of people in America that actually own physical gold and silver. So even if you're that person that John mentioned that you've got 5 ounces of silver, well, that could be that's a significant difference next to the person that's, you know, that doesn't have that potentially. But yeah, I think that, you know, looking at everything stacking up, you know, looking at the rail strikes, the impending rail strikes, the diesel shortages, you know, John, you made such a good point about the snowplow, you know, it's the snow trucks, right? That, you know, are they going to be, if diesel's 10, 12 bucks a gallon, are they going to be plowing the streets the same way, you know? And then, but gets in, it's like, well, what else runs on diesel? Well, it's our fire trucks, our
fire trucks, ambulance, all of that. Yep.
Oh, diesel generators at hospitals. Diesel generators at hospitals.
Yep.
I've been telling people, I've talked to some people involved in city and county planning. I said, are you ready for $12, $13, $14, $15 diesel? You're probably not budgeted for that. I said, the first thing that's going to go, I said, there's a diesel shortage too. So if we go into an extended freeze situation, which I believe we will, in fact, one of the drills I'm telling everyone in my group is this: you should be, if you live in a cold area, you should be drilling for and asking yourself, how am I going to deal with no power for 2 weeks to 30 days, no power, no energy, no heat? How would you deal with that situation? It's hypothetical.
That's a nightmare scenario. Yeah.
Yeah, it is a nightmare. Yeah. You saw, you were in Texas. You saw what happened.
I lived through 1 week like that, and it was rough. And I'm a prepper, and it was still rough.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And that's Texas. I remember it was Texas, but now you're looking right now, they're already setting records. Greenland ice, record ice. There's a polar vortex coming down right now. And people are asking me, it's like, you know, this has happened in the past, but I think everyone should drill that idea. And I think, as Seth said about having the conversation, it's now is the time to talk with your spouse, your kids and say, we need to have this conversation, because we live in a society right now where it's like hot water, hot chocolate, video games, you know, football games, basketball games. What do you mean? No power, no nothing. It's like you look in in Hungary.
Let me mention something.
Panic buying there.
Let me offer something practical here, real quick, that I've been playing around with. You can go online and you can buy an alcohol fireplace that is a portable little thing and just burns isopropyl alcohol. And you know, it's kind of nice to look at if you don't have a built-in fireplace. But the thing is, technically, you can burn isopropyl alcohol or IPA indoors. Obviously follow all, you know, safety precautions and so on, but it burns super clean. You can burn it indoors. I've been doing that to generate heat. And if you don't use it for heat, well, it's a first aid item, you know, for sanitization and prepping for whatever, surgical procedures or light surgery, whatever you have to do with ditch medicine. So I believe in things that you can use for multiple purposes in prepping. You store alcohol, isopropyl, you know, 91%, boom, you've got two immediate uses, including not freezing to death. I just want to say, folks, be sure to not leave open flames around children and pets, and be sure to have fire extinguishers and all that kind of stuff. I don't want people burning their houses down, but that's the kind of efficiency we need to have here. I know, Seth, that you do that kind of thing. You're always thinking about efficiencies. What can I buy that's got two or three uses in terms of prepping? Can you think of some other, you know, good examples like that?
Well, one, I think you just mentioned on your show recently was coconut oil. I mean, we've been, I think we recently bought like a couple 5 gallon buckets of coconut oil, you know, just to have
smart
stored in addition to, you know, probably a couple dozen 1 gallon, you know, kind of tubs of it. Because that's something that you can cook with, you can lubricate your weapons. You can, even when I've gotten wounds, the first thing I go to is coconut oil. You know, if I cut myself open and, I've smeared some coconut oil in there, that's exactly what I'm using. I want to mention something about heating though, because it's such an important aspect of this, because obviously, you know, if we can't heat ourselves through the winter, that's not good, right? So, you know, we recently put in, there's a huge kind of process to rip out and do a bunch of, you know, renovation and demo work. We put in a really big wood stove. We got a Blaze King, which is, you know, it's American made. It's what they use up in Canada to keep warm. And so that's obviously, if folks are in a place where they can get a wood burning stove, and you can get a few cords, if not more, of firewood stored outside. To me, that is the single best solution to get yourself through the winter, because you can heat your home, you can cook on the top of it, etc. But there's a lot of folks that, you know, look, like it was not inexpensive for us to put in a wood stove, and I think that it could easily be a $5,000-$10,000 job, like easily, if people want to get a wood stove. And a lot of folks can't do that, or they're in an apartment, or there's somewhere they can't. So one of the recommendations for folks is look at really prepping your clothing, right? So, you know, have a couple nice warm coats, have warm blankets, have wool socks, have wool kind of undergarments, you know, get it so that you can actually stay warm. And if you're in a place where you have a basement, start looking at, okay, how can that basement be inhabitable during the winter? Because your basement, because the geothermal heat, will stay much warmer than the first or second floor of your house in the winter. The other thing I'd recommend for anybody is that if, say, people are worried, oh my gosh, am I going to freeze to death? Well, go get a small tent, not the tents that have all the big, you know, fly netting that you can look at the stars, a basic tent, you know, depending on whatever size you need for your family, get that as one step and a few sleeping bags. So let's just say that, you know, it's the dead of winter and you don't have any way of heating your house. Well, if you've got a tent and you're in your basement and you have your four family members, you know, two parents and two kids all sleeping in a tent together sealed up, that's going to really help trap your warmth in, and that will get you through the winter, right? So while other people, they're not going to be able to do that, there's basic things. I love, you know, Mike, your approach is always high tech, low tech, no tech. Well, the no tech way of surviving the winter is just having a basic tent that you can use your body heat in to trap that in overnight. And then, you know, during the day, you're rugged up and you're warm clothes and you're doing things, and you're staying more active. But really the key is being able to get through those cold nights. And so that's just an easy solution. Because I think for a lot of people, they say, well, yeah, Seth, you know, you've got 5 acres, you have a tractor, you've got chickens. You know, I can't do that. Like I can't, you know, maybe if I'm lucky, I can buy a few ounces of silver each month. And so I always love talking about solutions that, you know, even with a very, very low budget, people can be proactive with.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If you can keep yourself out of the rain and out of the wind, if you just have shelter, you can set up different ways to be warm inside that. Just like you said, you can even do nesting, just surround yourself with all kinds of clothing and sleeping bags and whatever, you know, insulation, basically. You can stay warm that way. Okay. So John, back to you. You want to wrap up any final thoughts on the prepping before I go to more on crypto here?
Well, I'll tell you, I think what Seth was saying, I think the tent thing is tops. I think, you know, if you're just, you know, I'm clueless, what do I do? It's cold. Just have that tent ready. And I keep, you know, I keep a zero bag in my truck. Even I'm Southern California. It's, look, it's morning. It's, like, it's 40 degrees this morning. I thought, I noticed I'm putting a little more wood in the, I've been off grid heating wise now for almost 7 years. So, I don't use any type of energy there. And I know exactly how I've been doing it for so long. I literally know exactly how much wood I'm going to use on whatever the temperature is because I've been just doing it for so long. But I even, my backup was, well, if it gets, I mean, if we go, you know, 3 feet of snow here, which I don't expect, but it can happen. I have a plan. Okay. The plan is, you know, well, since the wood stove is out there, it's a freestanding wood stove. If we get, you know, if we go full Mr. Freeze here, I'm just going to seal off the rooms and just stay in the main room with the kitchen efficiency.
That's what they're doing in Europe.
There's a fireplace there. Yeah. Just seal off the room and just, you know, the kitchen's there. Because on, in fact, this morning, I turn on the fireplace. I mean, this wood stove, but go on and big cooking spot. I put a big pot on there and let the and it cook. I can cook the cooking the food. Believe it or not, you just see the pioneers actually knew what they were doing. A little tiny house, little tiny stove. Small room, big stove, a lot of heat, and you're cooking and it's warming the place up and they just keep it going there. So that's the backup plan. Seal off the rooms, go to the front room here, plastic coated here.
So John,
and go with efficiency.
Yeah, I love that point. It's really great. And if you're not heating a big space, then you don't have to work as hard chopping wood, using a chainsaw, using, you know, an axe or however you do that, splitting wood. It takes a lot of effort. But right now, this, we're going to contrast crypto, the crypto generation, to all the things we've just been talking about, which is practical hands-on prepping. So we have a generation, I think, a lot of people under 30, not all of them. There are some really great young people who have been homeschooled and grew up on ranches and so on, who have all kinds of skills. But by and large, that generation has been living in this virtual world where nothing is real. They may have an online farm simulation that they're really good at, and they think they know how to grow food, but in reality, they don't know anything about growing food. So they've been living in the world of crypto. They think that their virtual money is real money. It isn't. It's backed by nothing, and it's going to zero, it seems, at least a lot of them are. It's already lost, what, 70% of its value overall in the crypto space. So, John, what do you think this is going to look like when that generation has to, like, climb out of the virtual world that they've been living in and try to survive in reality?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's, you know, we think, remember the greatest generation came out of World War II, came out of a situation that was, you know, it was World War II. People had to fight, people died, you know, and they, so out of, you know, the horror, the, you know, horrible, you know, war situation, the greatest generation came out of this. I think this generation coming in, the younger generation, is going to have, this is going to be their greatest generation moment here to come through. The good news is that there's so much technology, the ability to learn quickly and really upgrade. You're going to have some kids just like, okay, go online. All right. You know, Mike Adams prepping, you know, prepping with Mike, Seth Holehouse, you know, his guy's doing, you know, John Perez, you know, hey, a week with us and you're like good to go. You know, we're like, you, we didn't have this growing up. We just like,
true.
All of a sudden you're, you know, week now goes by, you can go. So there's going to be challenges there, but then there's going to be some people are just going to be caught off guard. They literally are going to be waiting for what? The participation award, which was to me, was a trap. You know, what do I get for showing up? It's like, you get to deal with life, you know, and hey, government, can I, where's my award for participating? Where's my, do I get my universal basic income? How about my free GMO cheese? You know, sure. Come on down. We got a camp over here for you. Go camping over here. You know, come to the FEMA camp here. We'll take care of you, you know? So I think this generation coming up is going to be challenged by it, but I'll tell you, I've met a lot of really great millennials who are just, they're just really waking up and just ready to go. And I think a lot of kids now, are looking, so a lot of kids are waking up saying, man, this is not good. Everything's falling apart. This crypto thing is just going off the cliff. And everyone here is turning out to be a scammer.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Sam totally. Bankman, you know, crypto bill. Every crypto billionaire is turning out to be what, a crypto toad.
Yeah,
you know, it's like
you chime in on that. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I'll start with a very very dark confession to both of you, which is I'm actually a millennial. So
what? You know, you're not a millennial.
I was born in 86. Yep. So, you know, so it's like I think that. You know, I really agree with you, John, that I have a lot of hope for humanity. And the reason being is that as much as they've dumbed us down, like look at the people living under the totalitarian rule of the CCP. They're now, once they got to a certain point, they're like, you know what? We want freedom and we're going to overthrow communism. And that's the human spirit. And this is what the globalists and the Satanists and the communists don't understand is that God gave all of us a human soul. And this soul that's inside of us has these special qualities to it that can't be altered. Even if they can modify our DNA through vaccines, they can't modify our soul. And so I think that, you know, when you mentioned the Great Generation, a lot of times, you know, looking back in history, when there has been hardship, there's this amazing part of the human spirit that emerges to conquer that hardship. And I think that, you know, a lot of the millennials and the Gen Z and these young generations, I think that their lives have been filled with so much meaningless fake stuff that, you know, it'll be difficult at first, but when they go through that experience of chopping up a tree and chopping, you know, and splitting some wood and building a fire and warming themselves with the fire they just built, and then, you know, cracking some eggs into a cast iron skillet on top of their cast iron stove, that will be so rewarding. And they might have spent the past, you know, 3 months building this massive Minecraft world as a video game, which is useless now. And they may have thought, oh, that was really fun, but it was meaningless. And so I think that what's going to happen is that we're going to have people all over the world. They're going to find a purpose in life that they never knew even existed. And we're going to see some amazing, amazing things emerge with humanity. I think we're going to see some really bad things also, right? We're going to see the best of people and the worst of people. But I am confident we're going to see a lot of really good things with folks.
Well, I'm glad you're both optimistic because we're going to wrap this up. But my friend Michael Yon told me the other day, you know, and he's an expert in famine. He reads books about famine throughout history and pandemics and war. And he said, Mike, in every famine of note, there was at least one community that had zero deaths. Why? Because the community leader taught the people to grow food. So they had decentralization. They did not starve. They did not die. And frankly, that's us. That's us right here. Yeah. We are those people that we're not going to die. We're going to make it through, even although a lot of others might not make it. But for those of you watching, it's not doom and gloom. It's not just hope either. It's a practical step-by-step method to stay alive while the world may be struggling around you and people dying off all over the place, but we can make it through. So final thoughts, John, to wrap up our with a sense of optimism, perhaps.
Oh, you know what? It's an adventure. I think no matter how bad things are going to get here, I think we should look at it as an adventure. I think it's a great time to be alive. I mean, there's really, if you stop and think about it, it's a great time to be alive, to see all these things. We're seeing the end of the Fed. We saw crypto come and go so fast. But the one thing we haven't seen is silver and gold become money, which we are going to see happen here. There's going to be challenges ahead, but as Seth said, I think we're going to see a lot of people step up into the game. But there's also a camaraderie, because when it comes to prepping and survival and doing the right thing to move forward and to exist and survive and thrive, there's a commonality that comes across all political lines, all racial lines. And that is, you know, what are you growing? Food, things okay over here? So I think that's going to come through here. And like I said, there's going to be bad things happening, but people are going to come forward here. And from a, you know, from a positive standpoint, I tell you what, from what I've learned on my Telegram channel here, the one thing that I've gotten out of is, wow, there's a lot of people that are really awake and getting the job done. And it's only been in the last month I thought, man, I have a lot of hope. I can't believe how many people are awake. They see it. They're getting gold. They're getting silver. They're growing their gardens. They're buying backup generators. They're buying extra wood. They're working. They're getting their kids up to speed, their wives, their husbands. And it's a great, great thing. So I'm very, you know, like I said, there's going to be pockets. You know, I wouldn't want to be in an urban area or a suburban area next to an urban area here. Good to be out of town, you know, but I think that I think another thing is this. Donald Trump has been talking in his rallies about the death penalty in every single rally. And I'm thinking, you know what I think he's talking about? I think he's letting people know that we have life and death situations up here, and people may end up paying the highest price for doing the biggest wrong, you know? And I think I thought that was interesting. The one thing he keeps on talking about. So we have challenges ahead, but I think, you know, as Americans, you know, we'll come together and we'll make it happen.
All right.
And, that's what I see. So I'm very positive about this.
Okay.
You know,
all right. That's awesome. And, Seth, what are your thoughts?
Very similar to John. I mean, I think that the nation that we're living in right now is perhaps the most divided it's been maybe since the Civil War. And I bet actually it was even more united during the Civil War than it is right now, because at least there was, you know, common things people could agree on. You know, there's two genders and, some very basic fundamentals that now it's like you can't agree on anything.
Right. One nation under God. Yeah,
exactly. Right.
I forgot that chapter.
Yeah. You know, so, but I really think though that what we will witness is America being reborn with the true values that we need to have. And I think that, you know, naturally what happens during hardship is that hardship has this really amazing side effect. Is it brings truth to the surface. You know, so all the lies that people have been fed, all the lies that, you know, whether it's the conservatives or the terrorists or, you know, the lies about, you know, gender or how the family unit is racist or whatever it is, you know, hardship is going to really reestablish what's true. And, you know, the people that before looked at their neighbor with the Don't Tread on Me flag and said, gosh, this guy's a redneck racist, are now going to be like, wow. Like, thank you for teaching me how to garden. Like, oh my goodness, you
right.
To save my child's life, right?
Now, chopping so, wood is racist. No.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that, and this is something that's really, that we have to be able to frame going into this. And it's really important. I'm really trying to work on it in my own life is that, you know, we have to be willing to walk into this period of suffering with as much compassion as we can have. Because even the people that were, you know, yelling at us or screaming at us or shaming us on social media, you know, they've been lied to and they're just repeating those lies. And so they're going to really need our help, not to mention all the vaccine injury stuff that we're going to be dealing with. That's a whole other ballgame of things. But I think that it's really on our shoulders to prepare ourselves, most importantly, in a spiritual way, right? And as our relationship with God and how we look at our role in the world so that when this difficulty arises, we can be the ones that are saying, you know what, I'm going to help out anybody that I can and really have this heart of compassion, because fundamentally that's what will destroy evil. Like that's the single thing. Like, why do you think they make us hate each other so much? Because they want to keep us as far away as they can from compassion and kindness and true compassion, not the modern version of love, which means that, you know, hey, even if you're a transgender that's, you know, diddling kids, I'll still love you because that's the love of Christ. It's like, no. You know, like there is a line of tolerance that you can't cross. But I think that that's going to be the big thing, you know, moving into this next season of human history is really having that heart to help unite people again, help them realize who the real enemy is and help people to realize who we are.
Well said. I completely agree with you. And John, sounds like one of your birds is singing Christmas carols too in the background there. So
you hear that? Yeah.
Totally love that. It's like, do you have a little Christmas hat on your bird? Is that
third day of Christmas? You know, believe it or not, that's the security bird, and the bird only does that when she sees a car coming down the road. I mean, it's 100% the most little tiny bird is. Absolute security tool there. So like I know right now I'm looking at cameras here behind, like, okay, so I see what's going on here. But I think, you know, Seth, to close up here, there was something you said that I completely forgot about to say, and that is we've got 225 million people who have been vaxxed. We may be seeing a biblical event of injuries in people here that make that will compound everything over the next 2 to 3 years. I mean, you know this, Mike, and just we have a, you know, it's literally it is a biblical in scope situation. I remember when Joe Biden talked about 91% of Democrats being jabbed, you know, and I remember, Mike, you gave a show once, you talked about groups, people that just went out and basically rehabbed houses where people were in there and they're basically salvaging things. If we have a situation where the vax injuries go way beyond what it's expected, things like real estate will never, they'll never come back because there'll be nobody living in the houses. And that may be part of the reason why they're trying to roll in all these illegal immigrants to fill these voids out.
Right.
Here.
No, so but maybe this is the Biden administration's solution to food inflation, because depopulation is deflationary. It turns out fewer good people point. Left alive to that. Buy things. Maybe that's how they'll keep gasoline affordable, but it's a morbid thought there, but bottom line, I just want to give credit to both of you guys, Seth Holhouse, maninamerica.com, and John Perez at Silver is Money and Silver is Money News on Telegram. And I want to thank you both for joining me today. This has been a really great discussion. We'll have to have another one after Christmas and see where we are at that point. Thank you both.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Absolutely. Oh, and Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to both of you and our audience
Merry
as
Christmas.
Well. Yes.
Yes. We still say Christmas around here.
We absolutely do. All right. Well, and thank you all for watching. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. As always, feel free to repost this on your own channels or other platforms. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, a platform where we can have discussions like this without censorship. No censoring here whatsoever today. Isn't it great? Thank you for joining me. God bless you all, and God bless America. Take care. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.